Hi everyone.
Hi there.
Hope you all are doing fine.
Who are helping women with hypothyroidism? And there is a reason, of course, as all of you all are very well aware, that it's one of the things that's highly misdiagnosed or undiagnosed, and women keep suffering. And the biggest factor is she wanted to work because she's really interested in reproductive health and
yeah.
gut health. That's when also where she shines. And she wanted to work with only these two things. Actually, thyroid is one thing that first affects fertility. And of course, I was more concerned about that. I want to do something about this whole cancer, the breast
yeah.
cancer and everything. And it so happens that there is also sufficient research done, and there is a connection between hypothyroidism and cancer. Not only that, my own mom went through symptoms of hypothyroidism years before she even got diagnosed. So then, here we are. And so let's get started with our first question. We have already some questions from you all summarized. So let's try and cover them.
And definitely these questions that we have picked up, they are very commonly asked. So in groups, in various groups which we are a part of.
So the first question is, what can be the root cause of hypothyroidism? This is the one that we put in, you know, because I think this is something really important that you want to do, or should I? Okay, fine. So basically, hypothyroidism is way beyond just low thyroid function, which is an oversimplification. The root causes can greatly vary among different people. And this can include anything from poor digestion, gut health basically, which impairs nutrient breakdown and absorption. And more than calories, what we are made to believe, what we need, that we need to run our physiology is like nutrients, vitamins, minerals, phytonutrients, which are also needed to make our hormones. They are our raw materials. And of course, the hormones are not going to be built in thin air. You know, we do need things like tyrosine and everything, for example, even cholesterol. Two sex hormones are made from cholesterol. So this can be quite challenging, especially, you know, when, let's say, in the gut, we have hypochlorhydria, looks stomach acid. So of course, nutrients are not going to be absorbed, especially the minerals. They're not going to be broken down and separated from food. Amino acids won't be broken down. B12 is not going to be absorbed. So much is not going to happen. We are going to be super low on nutrients. And then speaking of insufficient selenium, which is can increase, since we don't have enough selenium, it can increase oxidative stress that negatively affects our thyrocytes and TPO, and which can impact sufficiency of T4. Then, of course, the body could also be having a hard time even converting inactive T4 into active T3, which is what, like, we, our cells, actually need. Again, we also need nutrients to power the enzymes for making this conversion. And a reminder that toxins like excess cadmium, mercury, etc., also impair the action of these enzymes. Poor liver and kidney health, along with inflammation elsewhere in the body, is also a contributor many a times. So there could be low levels of thyroid hormone due to an increase in thyroxine caused by factors such as high stress and high estrogen states. And with this, I have just started to scratch the surface. We could go on and talk about just this one topic easily for an hour, the root cause. I think we need to have a separate kind of a webinar for this. So anyways, in short, the point being, nutrient availability is crucial, not just for smooth running of the functions of our body, but also for endogenous antioxidant production to combat a pro-oxidant environment, which is normal, but more problematic when chronically exacerbated by processed foods, toxins, and stress. The whole thing is basically like a seesaw. It's, you know, in simple words, you know, and we need to balance this out. All right. Can hypothyroidism be cured? This is, of course, very usually, that this is asked all the time. You want to go ahead?
Yeah, so basically we cannot cure anything. Only the body is in a position to do something on those lines, provided it's given the right environment to do so. And the nutrients to carry out the repair and the regeneration of our tissues. The body is very intelligent, like we are made to believe. Like, you know, that our body is against us and it easily gets broken. And, oh, you know, we have aches and pains. It's just a part of aging. which we need to accept it sometimes. But there we speak openly about our body's abilities. It threatens a lot of people of the pockets of the big corporate, I guess. Anyways, but of course, supporting the body to regain the physiological balance takes time and efforts. It's certainly not an overnight process, and it needs to be done on a step-by-step basis. Think of it exactly like repairing an old car. The restoration is going to depend on the factors like how much wear and tear has it been through, which parts are more affected, etc. Only a good audit, basically, can give a more clear picture. So, like they say, never say never.
Okay. Labs are normal, but I'm still suffering. This is so common, and I'm sure many of you all are finding yourself in this position right now. So basically, your labs can come out perfect to the extent wherein the doctor will find it hard to believe what you're going through. And I know it can be very frustrating, you know, trying to explain that. And it's sadly very common. So, well, here's the thing, something that I keep repeating all the time. The thyroid hormone conversion, so much of the T4 to T3 and T2, you heard that, right? It's T2 is also present, and it plays a synergistic role with T3. So basically, it's intracellular. It happens inside the cell beyond the receptor, which isn't being measured in the blood. But the problem is not the conversion itself. I mean, the body is just responding intelligently to adjust itself due to dysfunctions that take place elsewhere, or the tissue health itself, which is struggling with too much like fattiness or oxidation or both, arising out of some of the root cause factors we mentioned in the first question. Because let's say, hypothetically, it continues to convert T4 to T3 in spite of all the nutrient deficiencies, which realistically wouldn't be possible, and especially when the tissue is struggling. The process of this conversion will generate a lot of hydrogen peroxide, which it also needs for the biosynthesis of thyroid hormone. However, if it's not broken down and cleared off, which again requires nutrients to support antioxidant function, of course, then what do you think might happen? A buildup of too much hydrogen peroxide, which also leads to its leakage. And this is a highly reactive oxidant, and is likely to cause damage to various intracellular proteins and DNA. So this can further lead to chronic thyroiditis, hyperthyroidism, and worst of all, initiating and promoting thyroid cancer. At any given point of time, please don't consider lab tests alone as a report card for your thyroid function or even health in general. It's just a small piece of the puzzle. What's more important is how you're feeling. Are you having symptoms? Do you feel vibrant? Another thing is, one has to look in the right places in terms of going for the right markers if you need those few pieces of the puzzle, right? So just testing for TSH isn't going to tell us anything much. It's, after all, a brain hormone. TSH is a brain hormone. You need to always go for the entire thyroid panel, period. And include antibodies as well if the need be. Let's move on to the next question.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So I have hypothyroidism. Why do I lose track of my thoughts, forget words as I speak? Again, a very common thing.
Actually, with so many people we've talked about, I mean, the first thing they say, they can't actually make up sentences. They feel so brain fogged. They feel so fatigued to even do that much.
Yeah.
It takes up a lot of energy, and even when they try to, I mean, they feel so confused by the end of it. It's pretty sad to know that.
Exactly. So actually in this, what happens is, like, the factors that are leading to thyroid dysfunction, things that we spoke about in the first question regarding the root cause factors. So these exact things are also leading to poor brain health and also causing things like brain tissue inflammation and degeneration, along with a deficiency of neurotransmitters. And specifically when neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine are impacted, it weakens brain function. Like, since deficiencies in these neurotransmitters, or when their pathways face a breakdown, it impairs the T4 to T3 thyroid conversion, while also negatively impacting the brain's communication with the thyroid, which is likely the case when symptoms like forgetting words, brain fog, depression, etc. Now, there are other causes as well, including the not enough ATP due to mitochondrial dysfunction arising out of things, especially like toxicity, wherein we know aluminum, for example, can get deposited in the brain since it has an affinity to it, leading to neurological dysfunction.
Because it crosses the blood-brain barrier.
Exactly. Okay. What caused my Hashimoto's and severe anxiety? It's again boiling down to nutrient sufficiency that dictates gut health and immune system regulation, while oxidative stress, you know, if it gets out of hand and uncontrolled chronically due to things like not enough antioxidant function, especially the endogenous one like glutathione, that's the master antioxidant that's made in the body, because methylation is negatively impacted, and even insufficient selenium and or even iodine levels, you know, these things can contribute to the development of nodules or goiter that can give rise to Hashimoto's. Returning to gut health, things like long-term use of pharmaceutical drugs, toxins, or insufficient vitamin D and zinc, microbial overgrowths, all of these and etc., more things can actually exacerbate, you know, the liver and gallbladder. It impairs their functioning, and which can actually cause enhanced intestinal permeability or leaky gut, you know, which just sends inflammation through the roof, and that too systemically, not just in one spot. And this is a great opportunity for dormant viral or bacterial activation, or even just LPS, like lipopolysaccharides, seeping into the bloodstream. All this acting as a trigger for immune hypervigilance, and we see a spillover of that onto the thyroid gland itself, along with also like things like molecular mimicry also coming into the picture.
Yeah, and for people who don't understand what's lipopolysaccharide, it's actually a metabolite of the gut bacteria. So that's what's seeping through the intestines.
Yeah.
And then the immune system has a reaction towards that. And almost 70 to 80%, I guess, of your immune system, it lies in the gut.
Yeah. And as for anxiety, it's a common symptom related to Hashimoto's and even hyperthyroidism. And as we already know that thyroid function is more like a thermostat. When it's turned down, everything is cold, slow, creaky. And when it's turned all the way up, everything is hot, revved up fast. Everything is just amped, hypervigilant, hypotension, high blood sugar, anxiety, wired but tired. It's more of a sympathetic dominant type of mood. Like, and on the other hand, of course, coming back to the cold and creaky part, is an understimulated side. Basically,
in herbalism, you know, as we say, it's like a cold, depressed, damp, stagnated tissue state. So that's exactly what hypothyroid is. Like the tissues are not able to do their function, and as well as there's a lot of damp or phlegm, or as we say, kapha in Ayurveda. That sort of tissue state that you need to actually stimulate and move it along and clear the toxins from the tissues so they don't get stuck. The kapha, the dampness doesn't get stuck, and it doesn't let other functions, let other bodily tissues do their functions well.
Yeah. So it's more like, of course, even as she said, it's like being stuck, but in the parasympathetic mode.
Yeah.
So like low pulse, low blood pressure, low blood sugar. Things wherein people struggle with dizziness because their body is not being able to respond to blood sugar or blood pressure as needed. Okay. Weight gain and diet. So keep gaining no matter how much I cut calories. It's simple. When the systems of the body are out of whack because of all the factors we have been discussing, the body is in a state of survival and it's not thinking of repair and relaxation, so that you can feel vibrant and well. Weight loss would be the last thing body would be worrying about. For example, let's say if there's a toxin overload and the body would be locking all of that away in adiposity, and it will create insulin resistance on purpose to keep it there. Because of course, these toxins are really harmful. You know, it can wreak havoc if you don't have enough, let's say, endogenous antioxidant function. So it keeps there on purpose, Otherwise, it will prove to be very life-threatening because your body isn't prepared to deal with it. And we've already discussed the relation of blood sugar imbalance in connection to hypothyroidism, also because of the metabolism has been down-regulated. So if you're forcing the body to lose excessive fats, that too by cutting calories, you're just increasing stress for the causing more imbalance. That too, all fats. You're cutting out all fats. So, you know, the question would be, what about the fat-soluble nutrients being available for our body? More on the calories, what one needs to do is focus on nutrient-dense foods. I could go on and on about this. I actually have prepared a webinar in the past on this particular topic. So if you're interested, just reach out to me and I'll provide you the link. Okay. So, okay. Basically, levothyroxine is a synthetic T4 only drug, which I'm pretty sure most of you are aware of. So although it's the standard one that's prescribed, it's sadly not helpful in most of the cases. Why? Simply because the problem is not the T4 thyroid hormone. It could be that due to the root cause factors involved, there could be an upregulation of, let's say, D3 enzyme in the cell that's deactivating T3 and converting T4 to reverse T3, you know, wherein T3 is being broken down. And specifically, if this is the case, we add T4 to the equation. If this is already going on, T3 is being converted to reverse T3 and being broken down because of that D3 enzyme, the iodinase 3. So, and we are adding T4 to the equation, we certainly have high amounts of inactive thyroid hormone because, again, it's what is it going to do with the T4, right? It's going to, again, break it down and reverse and make it into inactive thyroid hormone. So, this can actually exacerbate the disease. Only in some cases this can actually happen. And other factors could be that things like stress, increasing binding protein, and we don't have enough free thyroid hormone to be taken up by the cells. Speaking of which, cellular membrane and receptor health. What if there is thyroid hormone resistance at the cellular level, which happens in the presence of high oxidative stress like insulin resistance itself? So, or if you don't have enough raw materials, nutrients. The point is, T4 is a solution. I mean, the pill, the only T4 synthetic thyroid pill, it is definitely a solution, but it's not for everyone. It's not in all cases. It's just one solution, which won't work in all the cases. Everyone has different combinations of root cause factors based on which they'll need different levels and type of support. And there is no one solution or one answer. Neither is hypothyroidism or, for the instance, any thyroid dysfunction straight away, you know, as straightforward, for example, as to how the whole disease cascade enrolls. There is no one explanation. There is no one pathway. There is no one chain of interconnectedness. It's not very simple. It's not that straightforward. It's not simple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They say, as you know, you got up to this point because there were so many factors before this disease happened. So I think we need so many integrative solutions or protocols to make the current disease to go away. So it's not always that one thing would help. It's the combination of things that can actually help you overcome your problem.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on to the next question. Okay.
So I would say, I don't feel refreshed in the morning in spite of sleeping for 8 to 9 hours. Now, we can approach this from many different ways. It's either you're not making enough melatonin or you do have enough melatonin, but you're not able to use it. Now, in simple words, basically, it's the insufficiency of melatonin, which is due to the nutrient deficiencies that we do not have enough serotonin, because we are not having nutrient-dense foods and we have impaired digestion, which is most likely the case. And as you know, that 90% of your serotonin is actually made in the gut. And we need serotonin to make melatonin, along with other nutrients, also assuming that the enzymatic action or the function are on point. So that's one case. Or on the other hand, it can simply be that we do have enough melatonin, but it's been constantly blocked by cortisol release, and especially at night. So that means we have this adrenal dysregulation going on, which again has many factors, such as the body being hypervigilant more because of physiological or psychological factors, like, you know, you're ruminating over a thing a lot, or you have exercised pretty late in the evening. So there are these factors that you have to keep in mind. And this is something that's not happening suddenly, you know, because of something you just did recently, but because the body works in a very synergistic manner. And especially adrenals are a part of your HPA-TG axis. And even on that axis, it's your thyroid. So they both are regulating each other. That's why with hypothyroid state, we also see people have insomnia, or they do not get this refreshed feeling in the morning because of the cortisol awakening response. So there you go.
Okay. There is a connection between hypothyroidism and blood sugar dysregulation, and even insulin resistance in some cases. So hypothyroid function impacts our gut motility, aka peristalsis. So hence food takes longer to move and even stays in the digestive tract for longer periods of time than usual. So surely the first phase insulin response, which happens in the gut, is also skewed for that reason. And on top of that, like, low thyroid function slows absorption of glucose both in the bloodstream and the cell. So you're bound to face symptoms of hypoglycemia, one of which is to feel sleepy after big meals. But eventually after this, the brain freaks out because your blood sugar levels are low, and asks the adrenals to release stress hormones to raise blood sugar levels so that you don't fall over. Look at how intelligent our body is. You know, basically, if this pattern continues, it's likely to wear out the communication between the pituitary and the adrenals. Know this, that the thyroid always has a role to play, since it's the regulator, the manager of all our internal systems. It's really sensitive and responds even to the slightest of the change. And turning this issue around to, let's say, someone onto the part of developing a disease dynamic of insulin resistance, which, mind you, takes many years, even up to a decade at times, wherein we know the liver is taking a beating, and we know that a major chunk of thyroid conversion is taking place there. Thyroid function would be one of the first things to be affected. And there will be some level of hypothyroid function, subclinical function involved, and it's way more common and it doesn't show up in the labs. Hypothyroidism is not a black and white, it's either there or not there. That's not how it works. Our body is very complex, and our organ systems do not function in isolation. They are very much interdependent on each other and even influence each other. They are talking to each other via messenger molecules, which are called hormones, and some very unique ways that we are just starting to uncover.
We talk about muscle weakness and peripheral neuropathy and hypothyroidism. So now liver breaks down T4 to T3, and that gets into the bloodstream. And that goes into the skeletal muscles. And it acts in conjunction with your calcium, potassium, and sodium ions to regulate the muscles. So the problem here is directly not getting enough T3 into the muscles. That's why you feel muscle weakness. And even the mitochondria needs thyroid hormones to generate ATP, which all of our cells need, including muscle cells. So I am not even going to get into the cellular respiration or the role of cortisol into this, because there are few direct connections, but there are many, many uncountable indirect connections as well.
Yeah. Should I take selenium?
Yeah. So should I take selenium, and how much should I take? First of all, we need selenium, zinc, iodine, and tyrosine to make our thyroid hormone. Now, how does that happen? We take iodide from food and we convert it into iodine, which then attaches to tyrosine to make T3 and T4. But there is hydrogen peroxide that is required for this conversion, which is a reactive oxygen species. So it can cause tissue damage when there isn't sufficient amount of antioxidant present. Now, glutathione peroxidase is the antioxidant responsible for neutralizing the hydrogen peroxide. And importantly, selenium is a component of this antioxidant glutathione for the proper functioning of the thyroid. So selenium has been shown to reduce the TPO antibodies and slow or stop the development of Hashimoto's. And selenium is also safe for pregnant women. And we do recommend 200 micrograms of selenium every day, even during pregnancy, for up to about 6 months after giving birth as well. And selenium can also be obtained from food, you know, having two Brazil nuts, as they say, or even having your chicken, eggs, lamb, turkey, etc. You can get your selenium from there. Now, research also suggests that selenium together with myo-inositol, a remarkable powerful effect on restoring the TSH levels to a healthy range. So it also reduces both antibodies, your TG and TPO antibodies, and enhance the thyroid hormone production. So the dose is 200 micrograms per day for selenium and 600 milligrams per day of myo-inositol.
Yeah, and just make sure not to exceed that dosage, right?
Yeah.
You got to be careful. However, although this is applicable to most people, however, maybe in some cases, you know, it might not be applicable.
Okay.
Rashes.
Yeah, I have neck rashes, and what can it be indicating? So to be very frank, I think this is something to do with the liver detoxification. In my thinking, because I feel it's a very common symptom of hypothyroid. So because you are not able to detoxify the toxins well, or there is some kind of mercury toxicity that has been playing a part in this one.
So basically, especially in the people who do suffer from toxicity overload, or who don't have a tolerance to toxicity, or who are not able to detoxify well, which again will be affected in hypothyroid.
Yeah, and it's always, you know, there's always a connection of liver and skin, as we say. So whatever is happening in your liver, it will always show up on your skin.
That's true. Okay, I think this one you should be taking.
So is infertility connected to hypothyroidism? Very much, I should say that. So we have elevated prolactin levels generally when, you know, we are breastfeeding, and they are also known to perpetuate autoantibodies and also reduce libido. So that means your body is conserving that energy for the newborn, you know, and rather you going and making more babies. So body is reserving its resources. So if out of breastfeeding, if we have things like breast tenderness, if there is milky discharge from breast, or there is enlarged breast in males as well, libido issues, acne, infertility, excessive hair, and menstrual irregularities, these all are signs of elevated levels of prolactin. And now here the hypothalamus is stimulating TRH, which is the thyrotropin releasing hormone, and it's indicating pituitary to release more prolactin. Now, in a hypothyroid state, this keeps happening because the body is trying and struggling for hormone sufficiency. So it needs an optimal hormone level. And based on that interpretation, we can easily end up with an imbalance of other hormones, like a subclinical elevation in prolactin that can contribute to a number of different dynamics. The next, it's estrogen dominance. Now, this can be taken in two ways. Now, estrogen dominance happens when estrogen and progesterone are out of balance, though we know both of them play an important part in thyroid functioning. Not surprisingly, thyroid disorders are most common in women. between puberty and menopause. And elevated estrogen levels, they lead to an increase of thyroid binding globulin, which binds to the circulating thyroid in the blood, making it unable to do its job within various tissues. And then we get the symptoms of slow functioning thyroid, even when the thyroid is perfectly healthy. This is important to check because it might also be because you can just miss out on your thyroid test unless PBG and SHBG are checked. So elevated estrogen levels sometimes, no, actually it's always called estrogen dominance. And as well as you have obesity, and all of these things are happening because of which, what are the factors actually? It's the endocrine disrupting chemicals, or you're having some, you're having birth control pills or some other medications, or you have chronic constipation, or there is an imbalance of your gut microbiome wherein the estrobilum needs to break down the estrogen. So that's not happening. Or your liver is too overburdened, so it cannot detoxify the estrogen. And even in chronic constipation, as I told you all, since nothing is going out, so everything gets reabsorbed into the intestines. So to address each of these factors, you have to avoid things like plastic in food packaging, eat organic, or try to use more cleaner cosmetics as possible. Support your gut flora with probiotics, and having 2 tablespoons of ground flax seeds would be amazing for your thyroid. And also lacto-fermented veggies, that's amazing. And the third part then we come to is what we call is a low progesterone situation, wherein your estrogen might not be that high. But because of low progesterone, you might feel there's an estrogen dominance, but that's not exactly the case. So, but it's still an estrogen dominance per se. With low progesterone, it can happen in 2 ways. Because of stress, because if you have a lot of stress, your cortisol is high. And cortisol, it's a time of fight and flight. And when our body is just attentive, or it's just trying to make cortisol, it would use up the resources which are required for estrogen reproducing, digesting, repairing, you know, all the parasympathetic system. So rather focusing on that, the body wants to fight this stressful situation. So therefore, it's going to reduce progesterone. In anovulatory situation, where the progesterone is not produced because the egg was never released from the ovaries, therefore there was no corpus luteum producing progesterone. So these factors, when your progesterone is low, there will be infertility issues.
Okay, so I understand most of y'all are trying your best and you still don't feel well. And there are some people who come up and say that I've tried everything. In short and simple words, you know, you've got to get to the unique root cause. What has caused this, you know, hypothyroid situation or the thyroid dysfunction and that have been playing out, and work on them. And I'm not talking about putting a band-aid on the symptoms. I'm not talking about addressing the symptoms. That's what conventional medicine does really well. And the thing is that we have to give the body support where it needs in terms of targeted and strategic use of herbs and supplementation. And very importantly, you've got to be careful there. You've got to remember that introducing a ton of supplementation is just going to add on to that burden that you're already facing. Worst of all, especially in the case of using isolated nutrients, you've got to be very careful because they can upregulate or downregulate certain pathways which may or may not be desired in your unique situation, and can also create imbalances among other nutrients due to competition for uptake like zinc and copper. So, which takes us to the next question on where should we start? What should we do? All right. So, yeah. Now, coming back to this, and the main important point is that if you want to get better, you know, we recommend with, you know, that you start working in 3 areas. First area, the first thing you'd like to do is reduce your physiological, your mental stress. And when I say physiological, I mean to say reduced toxins entering via food, like pest-laden or processed foods. Then, of course, replace those processed toxins, processed foods that contain toxins with whole natural and, where possible, organic foods, at least in replacement of the dirty dozen. Keep a journal to find out about any foods that you're consuming that you might be sensitive to and that's causing inflammation. And this will also prove to be helpful in regulating your blood sugar levels, which is actually the second area that you need to focus on. And of course, the very basic things like get some fresh air, sunlight, go out for a walk, if that's possible.
Exercise.
Anything.
Because that would also help convert your P4 to P3.
It's not necessary to take a gym membership, just do whatever you like, whatever you can, whatever you can keep up with. Okay, and lastly and most importantly, work on your gut health. Because disease begins in the gut. That's the first thing we learned. Even what I learned in functional medicine, and that's what I mean, it's emphasized a lot. Support your liver, your bile flow, add in some fibers from foods, from vegetables, you know, I mean, the fibers that's in, you know, bread and a veggies, please don't think they are the same. And get in some magnesium, you know, our soil is a creature of magnesium, we really need magnesium, so that's the one thing you can, in most cases, safely supplement. I actually made a podcast, I think two parts of like the podcast episode on magnesium. I'll share it in the group or reach out to me if you want like to have a link. And so get in some magnesium, clean water, stay hydrated. It's very important. Small things, but they matter a lot. At the end of the day, you can support the body. That's fine. You can get the body back into balance, but you need to maintain and keep doing these things if you really want to stay well. Just, you know, become well, but stay well. So I think that's it for today's Q&A. And once again, we'd like to thank you for joining us. And we really look forward to our next Q&A session.
I'm so excited for the next one as well.
Great.
And just let us know in the comments what you think about it.
Yeah. Okay. See you all.
Bye.